What would save the world?
Veganism.
Gun control.
Ending capitalism.
Consensus.
More guns.
Nonviolent communication.
Energy. Green energy.
Spirituality.
More regulation.
Emotional education.
End the war on drugs.
Libertarianism.
Socialism.
It's all so confusing. There's so many problems in the world. How am I supposed to figure it all out?
Oh, you think that you should have all the answers? Who do you think you are, the Messiah?
No, of course I'm not the Messiah.
You are not the Messiah.
I know I'm not the Messiah. I hate Messiahs and all their narcissistic bullshit. I hate it. I just want to save the world from it. I just want everything to be okay.
Well, it sure sounds like you have a savior complex.
You're right. I probably do. I'm so terrible.
You're such a self-loathing white girl.
I know. I'm terrible. But I really care about the world.
Well, what are you going to do about it?
I was at Occupy.
No one cares.
I used to live on a commune.
No one cares.
I care. I care so much. But maybe I'm just like Che Guevara. So much idealism in my youth, but now it's just tons of hypocrisy and ego and lack of self-awareness and lack of awareness in general and just goddamn closed-mindedness.
Enough. Enough. Enough with your self-indulgent crap. If you really want to save the world, why don't you try listening to other people a little bit? Hear what people have to say and get other people thinking about what changes need to be made. And share your own opinions, too.
So you don't think I'm totally worthless?
No, but I doubt you'll actually save the world. Maybe start by trying to save the world from yourself. Focus. Grow from this project. And maybe others will, too.
That's exactly what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna listen and talk with other people, and maybe I'll lighten the topic a little bit by making fun of myself. I'm Tuke Etalo, and this is
What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m.
Welcome to Radio Free Brooklyn. Welcome to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn. I already fucked up the mics. All right. So like you heard before, my name is Tuke Etalo, and I just made that very, very long intro that I'm going to shorten, but that I was so narcissistically proud of that I felt like I should play it for you all today. So today I have Tess Henry and Michaela Derman-Krellen. I never say your name right.
It's okay.
I know, I'm one of those. I can never, ever say anybody's
name
right.
It's arbitrary.
It's arbitrary. Okay, cool. And the music you heard on the background of that was by William Mulsom. You can hear him on SoundCloud at SoundCloud/William Mulsom. His last name is spelled M-A-L-S-A-M. And you can find his music, his links to his SoundCloud, on my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/whatwouldsavetheworld. And as usual, you can email me at 2kedalow@gmail.com, and you can tell me what you think of the world. And you can tell me what you think would save the world. So, do either of you want to say something about yourselves before we get started with this very controversial episode amongst the white men of the planet, or of this country?
Yeah, I'm Michaela Duran-Krelin, and I'm a student at the New School, and student at Eugene Lang College at that. So, you know, PC life, very politically correct over there. Social justice theory, very theory, not practice.
Very theory, not practice. Okay, that's a very important thing. We're going to talk about
some
that
practice
a bit today. Yeah. So, Tess Henry, why don't you tell us a little about yourself, Mrs. Funny Lady?
I'm Tess Henry. I'm a storytelling comedian operating out of Brooklyn and Manhattan and whatnot. I did go to college and definitely understand the college kind of PC community, and I also very believe in like safe zones, and I'm safe zone trained and whatnot.
Very cool, very cool. What does safe zone mean?
A safe zone is just, technically I'm safe zone trained, so any time you need to feel safe, you can talk to me, and that immediately makes wherever we occupy a safe zone. But really a safe space is just kind of like, if you're at like school, maybe it's like a classroom or a central area where like it's been known that if you have any issues or any problems in your life, you can just kind of come here and feel safe because no matter what, we are here to support you.
That's very cool. So that's pretty much what I'm going for all the time and what I think our world should be like. I've been thinking about this lately about, you know, the police are a huge problem and some people want the police to reform, but a lot of people feel like that is just not going to work because the police are historically overseers. They're not protectors or safety people. Like sometimes like I'll be out in public and feel like some guy is following me or feel weird about something and be like, who can I go to? You know, a lot of people would say, oh, well, go to the police. But people know, if you know any woman who's been, you know, assaulted or harassed or stalked, the police don't really take care of it all the time. You know, you might get lucky. You might have a cop that's really cool and helps you, you know, get onto a train or something and ditch them. You might get lucky, but it's just like cops, like, I just feel like the cops are just like regular people in the sense, they're not regular people because they have the power, but they're just regular people in the sense that you might get a good one, you might get a bad one.
Right.
They're regular people who've been given like an insane amount of power.
Yeah. Without any proper training.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like they have no training. I mean, they don't have the proper training. So I feel like there should be like a new kind of team that's not the police. It's a new thing altogether where it's like a safety team where they're trained in situations that deal with mental health and situations that deal with sexual assault or assault or abuse, where they're trained to be on these conflict resolution things.
Yeah, I super agree. I feel like that's a really, really great idea. And I think that the practical way to put that into our real lives is just to kind of think of yourself as the safety officer and just make it known to everybody in your life that if you need to feel safe, I am here to help you feel safe.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, obviously, with something that like Took was talking about, it would be probably easier to be that guy because you have to think of like your own safety.
Yeah.
As well. I mean, I personally have risked my own safety for others, and that can be like, you know, somehow noble or something stupid. But in reality, it would be better if there was a more organized function of that as opposed to like one person being the safety zone. Yeah, ideally. Yeah. But then it could also turn into something like a neighborhood watch, which would be bad because then it's just like replicating the police. So they have to be like super well educated.
Yeah.
Well-practicing people.
Well, there would need to be, like, a whole school training thing on this alone. So the reason why this all came up is today we're going to talk about PC culture and safe spaces and these topics where I feel like, I feel like there's a lot of people, specifically men, but, I mean, it's a problem in colleges. And you hear about people complaining about PC culture in the media constantly, like, oh, it's censorship. I hear it from comedians all the time,
and I'm sure
you're familiar. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, Tess is a storyteller and comedian. I don't know if you said that already,
yeah.
But you did. Okay. But yeah, it's like you're like, why did you feel like you white dude should say the N-word? Well, because words don't mean anything.
Yeah, or a lot of times I'll see comedians who definitely identify as comedians, or just people in my life trying to make a joke where they make fun of like safe spaces and trigger warnings. So they'll like mockingly be like, I was triggered, I need a safe space. And I'm like, that's a real sentence that people have said to me. Like, you can't, it's just not something I feel like you get to make fun of, you know?
Unless you're that kind of person.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's as if they don't know what triggering actually means. Like, I've definitely had to explain that to someone. Like, it's really comes from psychotrauma.
Yeah, and in a lot of people's minds, a trigger is just like a small inconvenience you can't get over. But really, it's like something that holds real trauma and like deep-rooted something for you. That, like,
right.
Yeah, I mean, we go to this mic, me and Tess Henry, which is actually a great mic. You should absolutely go. It's under St. Mark's Theater every Tuesday. It starts at 9 p.m. That's when you can get in. You can put your name in a hat, and about like 9:45, they draw names. You can sign up on a list. Although, it's every Tuesday. But What was I gonna say?
People at the mic.
Somebody makes the guy who hosts it, Dan Ricker, who's one of my favorite people. I love
Such
Dan Ricker, but he does this thing where he says, "Oh, you know, the fire exits are there and there. Don't light a fire here because it's a death trap." And somebody, I have like an arson in my life occur, and I'm always just like, yeah. Occasionally, I've been there and just like started, like had to leave the room because it's just too much. But that's the thing though. Like sometimes you cannot avoid being triggered. And that's the hard part about safe spaces, because you want to make it safe, but you never know what's going to trigger people. Like, I can't listen to songs by that band Bonobo or whatever, because my ex used to, like, call me an idiot and stupid while listening to that stuff. So I can't.
Yeah, it's – sorry, did you – I was going to say it's about I think that, you know, you never know when what's going to trigger someone or when a trigger is going to come up. But you'd hope that this space is safe enough that the person can be like, hey – I was just triggered, and if there's, you know, any way that we could, like, discuss this and maybe, you know, see how we can move forward from this, you know, that's, I think, the other side of it. Like, you'd want if the space is really safe, then you would feel safe talking.
Right, of course. Like, you would hope that people wouldn't be so, you know, wrapped up in their own stuff to not be able to just, like, stop and then, like, either admit that, not even that you were wrong, because it wasn't that, like, someone was wrong to say something necessarily.
Accidents.
It could be an accident. You just say, oh, I'm so sorry, and then try not to reference whatever it was that was triggering. And it's really that simple.
And it's not about you as someone who accidentally or, you know, triggered somebody.
It's about the person.
It's about them.
Yeah.
And if you accidentally mess it up, you accidentally mess it up. But if you're trying, you just have to try.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, safe spaces are one thing, but then there's also just, like, blatant disrespect. Like, I consistently hear men specifically, like, try to be like, well, words don't mean anything to me. It's like, well, that's easy for you to say,
yeah,
because you don't have words like that, but like, you don't, like, so my father, who I love very much, he told me he told a joke to somebody and said the n-word in the joke, or he was telling a story and the woman was like, oh, you shouldn't say that word. He's like, well, it was a story. And I was like, but Dad, like, that's not your word to get to decide what it means at this point. Like, for you to decide what that word means is, like, historically weird. It's just weird for you as a white man to be deciding what that word gets to, when you get to say that word. That's rather entitled.
Yeah, it's, like, not your word, you know? You don't get to, like, put your argument into the thing. It's just not, you know?
You know, I've had conversations with men like that, like the whole words don't matter thing. And you have to explain that words can be a violence and that there's real action and real weight that comes out of words. And that's what I think the biggest thing about, like, PC culture that I bumped up against is the fact that a lot of the time it lies within speech, like changing speech. It's like, yeah, I'm not technically overtly racist or sexist in my actions, but in my words, and those don't matter. And especially with humor, people are like, but it was a joke.
Yeah, I was just being
for
funny.
For the sake of humor, I did. Well, okay, so are you trying to tell me that your own personal comedy or your own brand of humor is more important than being respectful of human rights?
Yeah, that's also like, can you not be funny without insulting people? Like, you don't. If you feel like...
Then you're not funny, bro.
Yeah, you're not funny. If you feel like the only way you can be funny is hurting people around you, even after they tell you, hey, you know, I don't really like what you're saying, but you continue saying it, then you're just not that funny, you know?
Right.
Then,
you're not that funny, and you're just kind of obnoxious, and you're just like... It's like you want to cause a problem. Like, it's so weird to me. It's like, what is this... Like, why do people, certain people, just get off on, like, causing trouble? Like, I definitely get off on mischief. Like, I like to pretend.
Chaos mischief.
But, like, I just don't understand that. Like, it's like, oh, like, definitely with this competition I feel with, like, a lot of different kinds of men, where, like, it's just, like, as well, I'm self-sufficient. Like, I'm less sensitive than you. And they act like that's such a power that they have. And I don't actually feel like, I've gotten it from women, too. But I just feel like this idea that, like, sensitivity is a weakness is such a problem to me. Like, I always feel best in spaces where sensitivity is appreciated, and I think that, like, you just generally create a healthier environment.
Absolutely.
In my opinion. So I have this opinion from this girl, Jordaine Searle. She's a comedian and my friend, and I think that she has a lot of really important things to say about PC culture.
about or PC or political correctness and the world's view. So I think I'm going to read what she has to say, and then we can respond to it. So she wrote, I think that people do not actually... Sorry, one second. I just was thinking about something else. So I was writing it down. Okay. So I think that people do not actually know what PC is. PC is being politically correct, which often has nothing to do with what they're usually talking about. Being politically correct is mostly about not using slurs or hate speech, which no one should defend. The problem is that PC culture has become the catch-all term for any time a woman or minority calls for respect in the media. It's misogyny and racism thinly veiled as defensive free speech. This was the response to my question is, what do you think people calling PC, what do you think about people calling PC culture censorship? And then I said, anything you want to say about PC culture or this? And she said, American culture is so white that people now consider it offensive to talk about anything else or insist that we should be talking about anything else. White people are literally offended by people of color asking to be more included in media. Men are offended that women want to be respected more in media spaces like comedy and theater. White people are literally balking at the simple suggestion of not being the center of all culture. What they do not understand is that this need for diversity and gender equality has always been there. The only difference is that people are just now getting the language and having the confidence to express their grievances. What people need to understand is that their refusal to listen to marginalized folks is a form of oppression. What they are doing now, anti-PC people and MRAs, that's the men's rights activists, I'll talk a little bit about that if you don't know what that is, and everyone like that, are being just as shameful as white people were in the civil rights era. They're being just as shameful as when gay bashing was openly accepted. They were just as shameful when they were working against women's rights to vote. They have ignored history and thus are repeating it. They are not fighting for freedom. They are fighting for dominance. Edit. They are not fighting for freedom. They are fighting for dominance. Okay, they're both fighting. Sorry, I read it. But that was Jordaine Searles' words, and I think that she said some really heavy but extremely important things. I think that, I agree with her that it's really oppressive.
I super agree with everything that she said.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. I was going to add to it. Now I can't remember.
You're going to add to it? I was going to say that specifically something I thought of before was about how when you say these words, these like hateful words, that we were talking about people that want to talk about how words don't matter. They actually do. And that's why anybody's voting for Donald Trump, because he just keeps saying winning, winning, winning over and over. Linguistics are a thing. I was actually talking to Tom Tenney like right before recording this, and he helps run Radio Free Brooklyn, or he manages certain things. And he was saying that he was going to study linguistics because the way we use words matter. It affects things. And he was talking about how the way we try to write everything for Radio Free Brooklyn, which is like a community run thing. We try to use words like communal, teams, you know, words that make people think about working together and that it's not all just me. Like he doesn't like to call it podcast, even right. though because it means like it's your pod, it's your own individual thing. And we're a group working on these things, not just like individuals in their own narcissistic little ego shows. That's not what it's about. So I think it is really important for people to be aware that their words have an effect on reality. And if you're going to say hateful words, even if you're going to say it as a joke, this is something I always think about. If you're going to say hateful words as a joke and then you can't handle people being upset about it, then it's not a joke and you don't take it seriously ever.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? If you can't, I hit my mic. If you can't handle that, then the whole thing is a joke to you.
Yeah, I just actually remembered what I was going to say.
Good.
She was talking about, or you asked her about what she thinks about when people say that being politically correct is a form of censorship. But really what it is the exact opposite. It provides a voice for people who are normally censored, like marginalized groups.
Mm-hmm,
and so it's really an act of censorship when you refute someone's valid belief that what you're saying is actually oppressive.
Yeah, and like this whole thing with Tim Burton right now.
I don't know what's going on with that.
So Tim Burton said this like crazy thing about why he doesn't put any black children in this one movie he did. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to look up that article and we're going to read it and talk about it. But I'm going to play the world premiere of
Killy Dwyer's song, Vagenda of Manicide. It's if you don't know what that is, there was some sign that was at some church that said, like, the Vagenda of Manicide and the Hildebeest. Here, let me look it up. Vagenda of Manicide. And Killy Dwyer is a really great comedian. She's going to be having a show on Radio Free Brooklyn in our upcoming season. It starts November 18th. It's going to be from 8 to 10, and hers is going to be bi-monthly. Okay, so this church had a sign that said, Beware the Beast, Hildebeest Clinton, and its Vagenda of Manicide. And I think that is just a ridiculous sign. And if you know me, you know that I really wanted Bernie Sanders, and I am still absolutely furious at pretty much everybody who didn't vote for Bernie Sanders, because everybody wants to talk about how afraid they are of Trump when he was winning in the polls, Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. So we had more of a chance to, you know, we had a real chance here to have somebody that was somewhat more radical than anyone we've had in a while, and we failed, and middle-aged people in America didn't listen to the millennials, even though they, you know, they fucked us over a bunch of times and then want to blame us. It's, the whole thing's very victim-blaming and weird. Anyway, let's just let's play Killy Dwyer's Vagenda of Manicide.
Eat a cronut, maybe four. Then I'm gonna take your guns, cause you started all the wars. I plan while drinking Pinot Grigio, liquid luncheon with your mama. You'll be on your knees begging, please bring back Obama.
Vagenda of manicide. Vagenda of manicide. Vagenda of manicide. Vagenda of manicide.
Vagenda of manicide. Vagenda of manicide. Vagenda of manicide.
The patriarchy is like so
all hail the Hildebeest. Hand-suited rat will never cease on your tiny balls. We will feast. Calls are the feast for the Hildebeest.
Nom 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 nom.
Shed you like uterine lining on my thinks period panties. Feeling like a natural woman is the new being manly. Gonna take a long hot bath and wash that man out of my hair. The blood of my enemies I now use as my skin care.
Vagenda of manicide.
Vagenda of manicide.
Vagenda of manicide.
About the state of the nation, signaling to goddesses to gather, cause the gods no longer matter. Don't talk shit about my style and tell me constantly to smile. 227 fucking years and we're at the final mile.
Vagenda of manicide.
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 Nom 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 nom.
Well, that was Killy Dwyer's Vagenda Manicide. You can find her on SoundCloud as Killy Mockstar Dwyer, or you can just find her on Facebook.com/Killy Dwyer. And she's actually going to be having a show on Radio Free Brooklyn, and it's going to be starting season 4. I think I already said November 18th for between 8 to 10. And I'm going to post more of that stuff on my Facebook page, Facebook.com/whatwouldsavetheworld. I was going to read this thing that I can't get to open right now. So Tim Burton said something about how he didn't cast any black children in I don't even know what the movie's called.
Miss Peregrine's House for Peculiar Children?
Yeah, that's what it is. And I think I found exactly what I'm looking for here. So I wanted to say, is Killy Dwyer's thing loaded yet? Okay, this is not really working. Everything's crazy. I was going to read Killy Dwyer's announcement about her show. Okay, well, we're going to do this first. I'll read about Killy right afterwards. So I want to write an open letter to Tim Burton from a black fangirl. And now that is not working. Everything's dying for me right now. But
I know what he said.
You know what he said?
Yeah, he said that he didn't cast any black kids in his movie because, you know, when he was growing up and watching the Brady Bunch, and they started getting quote-unquote PC and adding Asian kids, and he said a black, he thought that was, like, wrong and, like, some weird form of, like, censorship, and, like, they couldn't, when they started getting, like, in his words, more PC, he got upset with it, and he was like, you know, I didn't watch any of those, you know, very black-driven movies, like any Madea movies or anything, and go, ah, why aren't there more white people in that movie? Like, that's his reason why he didn't put any black kids in it, because he thought it's censorship.
There's just so much wrong with that statement. Like, I don't even know what to say.
So many things.
So what I'm going to read is an open letter to Tim Burton from a black fangirl. And this is the Huffington Post contributor. And she says, the tagline is, as a fan, I feel like you just pissed in my cereal, man. Dear Tim Burton, as a fan, I feel like you just pissed in my cereal, man. I tried for many years to pretend that you weren't just another out-of-touch, willfully ignorant Hollywood man. Willingly ignorant Hollywood disappointment of a man with a boner for whiteness and Eurocentrism. In fact, when I first heard that you'd be directing the big screen adaptation of Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, I was fucking stoked. I thought you'd be perfect for bringing the story and characters that I had come to adore to life. The first time I read that book was over 2 years ago in a wellness clinic, psych ward, after a failed suicide attempt. I was terrified and lost and happened to find that book on the tiny little bookshelf inside the clinic. It sounds cheesy, sure, but the story helped me a lot during a dark time in an unfamiliar place where I felt completely alone, sharing a room with three strangers and little to no security. It helped me to realize that there are other people like me out there and that I do belong somewhere. It's just up to me to embrace my uniqueness and live life in a way that draws in kindred spirits. If anyone got that, I thought it'd be you. Nothing is more boring, more common, more bland, and expected than an old white guy who acts like people want to see themselves reflected in the media is a nuisance. This is the bigger quote they popped out. And then I saw the trailer. Mostly white, except for the villain. I cringed. But who doesn't love Samuel Jackson in literally anything? Not to mention the movie book aesthetically fantastic, right down to some of the scenes looking exactly as I imagined them when I first read Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. And then, Timmy, my guy, you had to go and cough on my food, fart by my sleeping face. Why couldn't you just not say anything? Why did you have to go and pull the whole anti-PC bullshit so many other disappointments and headaches use when they don't want to confront their own prejudices and the reality of the world? Things either call for things or they don't. Here's the exact quote. Things either call for things or they don't. I remember back when I was a child watching the Brady Bunch and then they started to get all politically correct. Like, oh, let's have an Asian child and a black. I used to get more offended by that than just, I grew up watching blaxploitation movies, right? And I said, that's great. I didn't go like, okay, these movies should be more white people, and there should be more white people in these movies. Tim Burton, that's his quote on his lack of racial diversity in his movies. You found the addition of black and Asian cast members to the Brady Bunch more offensive than the often wildly offensive portrayals of black people in blaxploitation flicks. Flicks that wouldn't have even been made if Hollywood wasn't so fucking racist and weird when it came to diversity and fairness in casting in the first place. Because you're such a rebel for wanting to maintain a played out racially
homogenous status quo that doesn't even reflect the diversity of movie audiences, right? That's laughable, dude. To add insult to injury, you claim that things, movies, and other shows either call for things diversity or they don't. Okay, whatever, I'll bite. If that's so, then why did the role of a villain call for a black man? It sends kind of a questionable message. This is the first time you've had a person of color in a major role in any of your movies, and according to you, things either call for diversity or they don't. So you felt like the role of a particularly awful villain. We've both read the book, I'm sure. That guy is just the fucking worst. Called for a black actor. The only time your films have called for any significant diversity so far has been when you needed someone to be the worst kind of evil. That's not a good look, buddy. It leaves a horrible taste in my mouth about you that watching Sweeney Todd and Edward Scissorhands on loop just won't wash out. I loved all of your work because I always connected to it, to the focus on individuals who live on the fringe of society, weirdos, freaks, outcasts. Who in this society is more outcast than people of color? I thought you were someone who understood what it was like to feel as though you may never really belong or find your place. Someone who saw the beauty in outcasts, finally accepting themselves and finding love and true homes in the process. But you don't really understand. You don't get it at all. In fact, I feel you're a fraud because nothing is more typical than a clueless white man who treats diversity like a chore. Nothing is boring, more common, more bland and expected than an old white guy who acts like people wanting to see themselves reflected in the media as a nuisance or a problem as opposed to a pretty reasonable desire. In fact, numerous studies and a fair amount of research indicate that the media's representation has a heavy impact on individuals' self-image and sense of self-worth. So to treat something as important and quite frankly realistic and necessary as diversity as some irritating aside that isn't or should be something to consciously strive for is pretty fucking lame, dude. You may as well be another old asshole who's made uncomfortable by anything other than racial homogeneity and willful ignorance. An anti-PC, rich old white guy, typical, laughable. Please hand in your weirdo card. Please give back the label of eccentricity and outlandishness that you branded yourself with. You don't deserve it, dude. It's odd to me that someone who has been quoted as saying, I think a lot of kids feel alone and slightly isolated in their own world, doesn't see the validity and importance of diversity in the media. How do you think I felt as a young black girl, and even now as a young adult, who hardly ever sees people like herself cast in her favorite movies and shows? Isolated and alone. Seeing more than just white character after white character with few... superfluous or negative black characters thrown in could have helped me feel less alone when I needed it. But you know, things call for things or they don't, right? I just wish you hadn't said anything at all. At least then I could buy a movie ticket without feeling like some kind of sucker paying for a movie about outcasts finding their place, directed by a guy who thinks diversity is an optional pain in the ass, unless you need a super awful villain, because that calls for a black man, I guess. The irony. Sincerely, Della Dahl. That's a really heavy letter, and she makes some really good points. I mean, I've always had a problem with Tim Burton. Actually, I always felt like it was his outcast element was a little bit not real. If that felt ingenuine, especially because he screwed up Sweeney Todd so badly. Just my opinion as a musical theater kid, but that's irrelevant to this topic. I do think that, like, it's really weird how badly people don't want to be diverse or have diversity, like the dominance of white culture.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's awful. I don't know if it's weird. I think that it speaks to kind of the root of the problem that we were saying but not really saying earlier, with the fact that, like, people don't want to confront their own prejudice, especially if it doesn't affect their daily life. You know, like, everyone wants to think that ideally they care about the world, but for most people, they care about the world as it pertains to them. So, like, especially with that's why it's so common for white men to be prejudiced, because they don't live in a world where they experience racism, where they experience misogyny, they could be queer and they would experience that, but especially if they're straight and hetero and cis, they don't experience any kind of real societal systemic oppression. Like, you can experience bigotry and prejudice, but not,
or
like...
or class oppression if you're
right,
really poor.
That too. Absolutely, not to leave anything out. But yeah, the idea that one doesn't want... But even with people who experience one type of oppression, they don't want to sympathize necessarily or empathize with a different kind.
It's really selfish.
Yeah, it's super selfish.
Extremely. I think the whole idea of not, like, I don't know, like someone like Tim Burton not putting, you know, people of color in his movies, and then just being like, yeah, well, it's too inconvenient. It's obviously just so unbelievably selfish. But even on the smaller scale, when it's just like a comedian who's maybe told a joke that has made somebody uncomfortable, or they've, you know, just done something, and then they get talked to about it, and then they go, well, I don't think that I should change my behavior because I was just telling a joke, or I'm just trying to be funny, or it's unbelievably selfish because you don't want to have to think about how you affect the people around you. You just want to think about how you can put your, you know, yourself forward.
Yeah. I mean, it also applies to just specifically on the topic of diversity, like how strange it is when people cast, like, or not cast, or book comedy shows that are just all white dudes.
Oh my God.
That's still a thing.
It happens all the time.
It happens all the time.
It's an accessibility, it's a visibility thing. And to think that visibility isn't important is ridiculous. It's just absolutely ridiculous because of what was her name? Who wrote the letter?
De La Dahl,
what she was saying about, like, growing up and then not seeing anyone who looked like her or any people of color, women of color, in the movies and TV and books that she was consuming. Of course, it's going to affect a person and their sense of self-worth because that's what the public sphere is.
Yeah, and if you're only putting, like, you know, straight white people on your show, then, or, you know, whatever, you're losing, like, a very large chunk of very, very funny people. Like,
yes,
you're saying
not
that
to
the
mention.
Only funny people you can find were all white. That's ridiculous. Like, I could list so many people right now who are not white or not a man and are just unbelievably hilarious and, like, gems in my life.
I mean, I will tell you this. I was at an open mic, and this guy made these, like, really horrific jokes about a trans person. Ugh. And I said something to him. I said, you know, if my trans friends were here, they would have left. And I'm just wondering, are you making comedy just for other people like you? Like, are you only, do you want to, like, alienate a large portion of your audience? I mean, like, even though, like, the large portion of the audience was not trans, but I still was thinking to myself, like, only, like, a certain kind of person would be okay with sitting through this. Like, so I wonder if that's, like, that's just part of it. It's just like, oh, well, we don't want to include these people because then we actually have to think about them. Ugh. Like, and, like, what would affect them? Like,
what a disgusting thought.
I mean, but I think it's a thing.
Yeah,
I think it's
it
there.
It's totally a thing.
It's like, oh, if I book a black comedian on my show, I can't say this or I can't make this joke. Or, you know, oh, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, we have to be, you know, it's really weird.
And if you are the kind of person that will laugh and can digest a joke that is widely offensive, then what does that say about you? Not just that you're not trans, but that you're accepting of transphobic material.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I never understood, like, people are like, oh, what do you mean I can't make rape jokes? I'm like, I'm not saying you can't make rape jokes. I'm saying don't make fun of people getting raped. Make fun of the rapists. Make fun of our culture that, like, accepts rape.
Yeah. It's never, you're not being funny if you're making fun of a victim or somebody who has been hurt or marginalized in any way. Like, it's just not a joke if you're hurting someone's feelings on purpose.
Yeah. But I actually want to bring it back to this other topic we have, where you said that it's the thing about going to the new school.
Oh yeah,
how it's
practice,
like,
versus theory.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at the new school, and I don't know who's listening to this, but I don't care.
What's up?
So what's up at the new school? I'm calling you out, all of you people. Not everyone, but
losers.
The large majority of the student body that talks all the talks about being politically correct, just as one thing, fighting for social justice, you know, all this great progressive ideology, really. And also, like, we talk about ways to put it into action, but not most of the time, like, most people I know don't, or live in a way that is super, like, they're in a bubble. And they don't experience any of the things they talk about or any of the things that they claim to be for. And it's super frustrating for me because, I mean, obviously I have a lot to learn and a lot to grow from and a lot more to do in an action sense. But I do put it into action. I do certain things. I don't know if I should go into specifics, but the point
please do.
No, please do. Okay. Like, for one thing, we talk about being art and, like, making it basically, like, breaking down a hierarchy in art, just as, like, an example.
They talk about this
we
at
talk
the new
about
school
this
as part
the new
of the curriculum?
Kind of part of the curriculum, also just within conversations. Yeah, but definitely part of the curriculum. We talk about this all the time. And I busk sometimes in parks, which is a way to break a kind of hierarchy. And I don't know anyone else who does that or will come with me to do that. Like, I've invited people.
Rowan used to.
Rowan does. Yeah. Rowan doesn't go to the new school anymore. Good riddance.
So let me talk some shit about the new school real quick.
Talk some shit, please.
All right. So the new school.
One more thing. And y'all are seemingly, like, so about, like, Black Lives Matter and people of color, but there is a large group at the school that is for social justice that do attend marches and do organize. But for the rest of you, like, you don't come to marches. You don't have difficult conversations with people, at least not that I see. I shouldn't say that. That's a wide generalization. But I don't know if you do that much. Seems like a lot of talking.
I mean, do you think that part of activism is talking, though?
Absolutely. That's why I said, like, because I said you're not having the difficult conversation, because you might be. You might be having the difficult conversation, but you might also just be talking to other people who just agree with you.
Yeah, I hear that. Like, people are so avoidant of confrontation and conflict about that kind of thing. And I feel like the new school is just the organization as of, like, Michaela, you know I love you. But
word.
I have some feelings about the way the new school is run in general. They build big, giant, fancy buildings in an area that used to be very much like low-income artists and other low-income people. And now it's been primarily taken over by both the new schools, the new school and NYU. And it's like, and I have friends at the new school. I like a lot of people who go to the new school, but they just keep building these like fancy buildings and probably raising the property taxes in the area.
Right. And in your curriculum, how are you going to talk about that? You literally talk about that. And then you also talk about like...
It's a gentrified school.
It's a gentrified school, and you talk about gentrifying
of a school.
Yeah, it's a gentrification of a school. It's a gentrification of the mind. It's just, like, ridiculous. And how are you going to do that and then be inherently capitalist, classist, and racist in your institutional practice? Like, especially within the administration, it's totally top-heavy. I mean, maybe the faculty doesn't teach that way. They teach against that, but we're still part of the system.
And also... I don't know if Rowan cares if I tell her story. She probably...
I think Rowan would love it.
Okay, well, I'm going to tell her story. Their story. I'm sorry, Rowan. Rowan is a fantastic person. Rowan is, like, bright, intelligent, and amazing musician. They are so smart. You know, I would think they'd be, like, the perfect student at the new school. Or not, you know, there's no such thing as perfect, but... the ideal student for what they advertise themselves as, the school advertises themselves as. And Rowan wasn't able to get enough financial aid to stay at the school. And apparently they went to the financial office and found this list of like scholarships that they could have applied for like weeks and weeks before, but they just never told them about it. So then they had to move across the country. And I think they're pretty happy. I think they're happy. But it's still just like, hey, new school. Like,
and this is not the first time that has happened. It's happened to multiple of my friends. My friend was going to graduate, and she couldn't because of financial stuff. And she was this close to it. And they led her on. Like, they led her to believe that she would be fine, that she would graduate, that there would be money, that it would be good. But it didn't happen. And that's horrible. And then her friend read a list of names at graduation, actually, last graduation in May, of people who should have been able to graduate but couldn't. Like, you wonder why we have such a high dropout rate. It's not because people are, like, magically finding their dream jobs before they graduate. No, it's because they can't afford the school.
Well, these phonies. There's so many phonies.
These phonies. Marxist phonies.
I mean, who isn't a faux Marxist phony when it really comes down to it?
Oh, man, I just talked so much shit about the new school. I'm so happy I got that off my chest.
Yeah, you should talk shit about the new school.
I do. Probably. I do it all the time.
I think it's, like, really, really messed up how much stuff they get to do. I don't even know. So let's play another Killy Dwyer song. This one I just like. This is just silly. It's called A Hypochondriac. It makes me laugh a lot. Here we go.
I think that I am dying. Scurvy, mangy, you're not sick, for I have a bet. Or do I mean that I do not? I went on WebMD and saw 100 things I do got.
Spinal bifida, rickets, scarlet fever too. Flesh eating bacteria and also the swine flu. What? The mumps and the measles, the crap and the shingles. Cancer!
That's not cool.
I'm sorry. Wait, do I have cancer? Are you saying that?
That was Killy Dwyer, Hypochondriac. I really like that song. I've heard it live a bunch of times. I've actually never heard the recording until just now. So now we are all on the same page, and I am going to rep Killy Dwyer's thing now that I can actually read it. She will have a Radio Free Brooklyn show starting November 18th from 8 to 10. It's going to be called Mock You Mental. And she will, this is her words, it'd be part me spinning. Yes, I realize I won't be playing records. I'll be clicking MP3s. Comedy / quirky / novelty / outsider music. Part interview, part drinking game, and all fun. You'll be able to call and ask questions. And I'll also be doing a short lightning round phone interview with the guest parents or mine for good measure. Please email me at Kelly at KellyBDwyer.com. So her artist name is Killy, K-I-L-L-Y, but she spelt her email as Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y. Any MP3 you think might like to play on my show, this is all about featuring you, the amazing community of awesome-tastic musicians I know and love. So that is Killy Dwyer's announcement, and you should find her on Killy Dwyer Facebook. She is super groovy, and you should like her page. So now what we're going to do is we're going to hear a little bit from Tess about being a safeguard. Is that what you call it? Safeguard?
Safe zone trained.
Safe zone trained and some other things. Go.
So I got my safe zone training when I went to school in upstate New York, Canandaigua, New York, which is like 6 hours north and very, very redneck, super kind of like a Christian-y area. So it was very important for myself and a lot of my friends and people in my life also took the safe zone training because it's a space where if you are somebody who is not cisgendered or you are, you know, LGBT+, it's really a very, very hard environment to kind of be in. And that's not to say that like everybody was bigoted, but there's definitely, if one person's bigoted, that's too many people in your life who are bigoted, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I have a majority of my friend group and the kind of people surrounding me were people who were queer and not cis, and they were receiving lots of like hard walls and backlashes in their home life with their families, really, for like, you know, like I have a couple friends who I have a friend who, when I met them, they identified as female, which is, you know, their the gender they were assigned at birth, but now they identify as somebody who is gender fluid, but they received a lot of flack from home. Their family won't call them by they call them by their birth name and not the name that they've chosen, and they
dead naming them, they call that, right?
Yeah, and they refer to them you know, with their old pronouns and whatnot, and it's just that can be a really, really hard environment to live in. So it's really important that, like, at school and in your own, like, I lived in a dorm, so in like an own apartment or a dorm, that you can create a nice safe zone for them so that they feel like they don't have to deal with those stressors in their outside life, that you can be a nice safety net for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if people can't have a safety net, which is their immediate family, people need to build their own family.
Exactly. And yeah. That's I think what myself and a lot of my friends and peers from upstate really tried to create. There wasn't a lot of places that we could call, like, this is our safe zone, but if you were with us and in our squad, like, we had you. We are here to be your safe blanket, you know?
Community will save the world.
We'll save the world together.
I actually think that might be the answer to okay, so we can stop doing this show now. We found the answer. The answer to what would save the world is community. What would save the world on Radio Free Brooklyn? So you want to rep Comic Sutra Saturdays?
Yeah. I am a co-producer for a comedy variety show at the end of every month called Comic Sutra Saturdays. It's at 10 p.m. at the Under St. Mark's Theater. We are an inclusive show, very. Like, talking on diversity earlier, the importance of diversity in comedy is really very important to myself and my partner in the show, Nick Balsero. It's it's super that everybody has a voice and gets to be heard, and everybody is, you know, funny, not just, you know, not always white people. Like, it's just, it's baffling to me that other people, you know, and won't put anything with minorities or any women on their show. It's our show.
I've been on Comic Sutra Saturday.
Yeah, yeah.
I was on the first one.
Two was our very first act on Comic Sutra Saturday. Fucking killed it. Awesome.
As usual.
You should come out to our show. It's always a really, really great time, and we always have a nice, diverse cast of people.
Nick
Balsero
is a dick, and I love him.
Yeah, Nick's a dick.
True.
Yeah, but he wasn't, though.
Yeah, so, you know.
He learns.
Yeah, he's a dick that'll listen to you. Yeah, he's so much better than some of the other people in our community who I consider good friends of mine will make fun of me for being PC and PC culture and how stupid, you know, and how silly I sound. Like, oh, why do you care about that? Like, just stop, you know? And it's like, no, this is important to people around me. It's important to me that everybody in my life feels safe. Why do you feel like you get to make fun of it, you know?
Yeah.
Well, because they don't want to have to confront the seriousness of that. And I feel like a lot of people who make fun of this kind of stuff really, like, know that it's something they should be confronting in themselves, but they're afraid to. Like, I know a lot of male activists who are really, really, like, hard against the so-called...
I know who you're talking about, yeah.
Oh, you know, exactly.
No, not, like, the people. I met similar people like
yeah,
that. Yeah,
it's sort of like... I just feel like there is this whole community, specifically of, like, older white dudes,
mm-hmm.
like old school. You know what I'm talking about? The kinds of guys who hang out in, like, grassroots and whatever.
Homies. Yeah.
What?
Mm-hmm.
You said the homies.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're, like, really good. They have some really good ideas. They have some good ideas, but they're, like, primarily theory. But they don't like to acknowledge a lot of the race stuff. And I'm like, they admit that there's, like, racism, but they don't like to acknowledge a lot of the intersectionality,
mm-hmm.
where they feel like it's, like, prejudging or something. Do you ever hear that argument?
No, I don't know that argument.
That, like, when people say anything about, like, white dudes or want to say anything, like, about, like, the racial and, you know, misogyny and racism, they just want to be like, oh, well, that's just prejudging people.
Oh, no, I haven't heard that, but I can imagine that, and it's obviously not true. It's also like, poor you. Even if you, like, didn't intentionally say something racist or misogynist or classist or whatever it might be, and then it's like, I call you out on it, and then you're like, well, I didn't mean that, and you just prejudged me as a racist. It's like, even if I did do that, which I might have based on what you said because it was racist, like, so what? So correct me, and we'll learn, and that'll be it.
Yeah, it's also not that hard to correct your behavior. Like, I had a joke about some roommates of mine where they were women, and I maybe said some things that weren't very nice about them, and somebody was like, hey, that's a little misogynist. And I was like, oh, I absolutely did not mean it in any kind of light that way. I have to think about a different way to tell this joke that doesn't make me sound misogynist. It literally takes 2 seconds to be a good person.
Yeah.
Like, it literally takes two seconds to be a good person.
Yeah, no one is perfect. I like it's that totally line. About that. It's totally the reactive nature. I've been called out for saying stuff that I didn't mean or whatever it was. Like, you apologize, you fix it, you figure out a different way. Like,
yeah, it's really not difficult.
Nope. And if you don't know how, you ask. Like, oh my God, I'm sorry. How can I change this?
Yeah, like what do you, you know, give me input? Like, how should I?
It's censorship, man.
And not that it's anyone's job to educate anyone on their own.
Yeah,
stuff,
and no one's saying censor yourself. It's just saying maybe modify your behavior.
Mm. So this is what we're gonna do. We're gonna wrap up. I'm gonna put on a Kelly Dwyer song to roll out the show. So do either of you have any last points you wanna make before I sign off?
I just wanted to say, if somebody feels the need to feel safe, you don't get to tell them that they don't get that, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, or you're violent.
And if you don't understand why the need for safe space is necessary, then you haven't been in a situation where you felt very unsafe constantly. And you just have to think about it from someone else's perspective.
Which means you're just not that experienced and you just don't know what you're talking about. And it's okay to be wrong. It's okay to not know.
It's okay to be wrong.
Learn. Learn, bitch.
Yeah,
sorry, that's totally not business.
One last thought. When you're called out, stop, apologize, listen, fix it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not always the person who confronted you that you need to ask a million questions
Absolutely.
To.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do your own research. Figure it out. It's not like you're not entitled to all the answers to why someone asked you to stop doing something. Like, we're going to need to have another episode on this. This is an intense thing. Or on things like that. See, that's the next episode. We talked about PC culture and the misconceptions about it. I think that next time or pretty soon I want to talk about, like,
how to better yourself.
How to stop being a fucking misogynist racist. I don't have all the answers, but I'm trying, so I'd like to work that out. So thank you. This has been What Would Save the World. My name is Tuke Edelo. This was Tess Henry and Michaela Duran Creelan, who won't tell me how to pronounce it.
Creelan.
It's Creelan. Michaela Duran Creelan. Creelan. Anyway, I just burped into the mic. Thank you for listening. If you disagree with me, if you agree with me, if you don't, if you love me, if you hate me, if you want to be on the show, if you want to talk on the show, if you have a topic you think I should cover, email me at 2, like the little numeral, 2, not the Roman numeral, the numeral.
The Arabic number.
Yeah, the Arabic number, thank you. 2KEDALOW @gmail.com. This has been What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. All right, here we go. Here is Kelly Dwyer's song, God Wants You to Come.
A hypnotic sound of surging excitement and power. People hearing it became caught up in a frenzy and couldn't help moving to this pulsating, almost religious.
No need to feel no shame, his story is to blame. You say you never came, you think your lady parts are lame. The clitoris is the only human organ designed purely for your pleasure. 4 inches of clit inside your body, a tiny penis that you can measure. The clitoris is so special and unique, 20,000 nerve endings, it's not the place you be. But it's real close by, like a tiny buzzer.